D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 387, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Talaferro Neal from NealTechSolutions.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Talaferro.
Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Great to have you on the show and appreciate you sending me an email and getting signed up to do so. So appreciate you coming out.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself and basically how you got started in computer repair?
I got interested in computers when I was in middle school. I remember, taking my mom's computers apart, and she got pretty upset about that. I would take all the electronics apart, and then one day I'd just figure, hey, let me try to put it back together. I put it back together, got it to boot up and everything, and but the OS wouldn't come up. I think it was like Windows 98 at the time or something like that. So I kept tinkering with it, read some books on how to get it back up because, she wanted it working, functioning.
Right.
I got it back up, man, and as soon as I saw the logon screen, man, it was like, it was just awesome. I had done it by myself. I had taken it apart, put it back together. I went to school, went to St. Phillips College here, and got my associate degree, A+ certifications and all of that. I've had plenty of jobs, one day I just told myself, hey, I'm going to go into business, for myself. I had been previously employed and got laid off from that. I mean, it wasn't anything stable anyway. So I said, let me just take this time off that I have and see how far I can go with it. I ended up opening a shop in a local flea market, stayed in there for about 2 years and quickly realized that I was outgrowing that space. Not to mention all the, neighbors that I had in the flea market. I had a guy right next to me that played he sold CDs. And all day long, it was just music blaring. I couldn't even talk to my clients. I'm trying to explain to them, what we need to do to fix their computer. And, music is just drowning us out.
Right.
Me and my wife got our income tax in and decided, hey, let's take this and, just go full force at it. At the time, it seemed feasible, but in hindsight, it was probably just a leap of faith because I had enough to pay for a month's rent, a month's electricity, a month's water. Everything was for the first month,
right?
And pretty much nothing after that. So it was, it was either going to make it or not. So this is my second year being here in my location, and I'm glad that I made the jump. So it was a rocky ride at the beginning, but everything's going well now, going strong.
That's awesome. That is a great story. That's neat. You started off in a flea market. That's something I would have never thought of, but what a great place where a lot of people go.
The thing about the flea market was, people would go in, to find a deal, to find, all kinds of, like I said, they sold CDs there, furniture, all kinds of stuff. The problem that I ran into with the flea market is nobody brought their computer with them. They'd go into shop for other things. So it was sort of like, they found me and, oh, well, how much do you charge for this? How much do you charge for this? Oh, that's a great price. I'll bring my computer back. And I found that probably only 40% of the people that came in and talked to me actually brought their computers back.
Okay.
It just wasn't a location that, okay, well, next time I'm that way, I'll bring my computer or anything like that. So Okay. You know, the flea market was a good stepping stone. I pretty much had free rent because I did their website. So I couldn't ask for much more at the time. But like I said, it gave me that sort of stepping stone to say, hey, I can do this, and let me go on and pursue it.
That's great. Yeah. And you're right. That is definitely a leap of faith to go out there and go, hey, I got 1 month's worth of everything. And then next month, we don't make money, I don't know what we're going to do. But
right.
For right now, and you know, and I think when you do things like that, I think they generally work out. You know, you have a skill set that you use, and you go out there and say, you know what, hey, this is what we're going to do. Now, the location that you got, is it in a bustling area, or is it, you know, where's it kind of located?
It's in it's a small office building. It's probably about 7 or 8 units.
Okay.
I have about 1,200 square feet. It's off of the main highway.
Okay.
And then off, you know, you exit the main highway onto a main road. Now down that road, my address is that main road. It's right there. It's called Riddiman Road. The address is a Riddiman Road, but you have to actually turn on a different street in order to get into the parking lot. So it's not the best location as far as, you know, people seeing it driving by.
Right.
I do have a sign out front towards the main road. And I do get quite a lot of walk-ins, from people who see my sign and decide to check it out. But most of my clientele is referrals and, you know, me advertising.
But that's great. Even not being in, like, let's say a downtown location or a corner location or something like that, you're still able to pull in enough people and do enough work that it's paying the bills and you're able to live. That's great.
Right. Yeah. It's, and like I said, when I first moved in, I had zero foot traffic. I went literally that whole month, the whole first month, without a single person walking in the door. Everything that I had was either a house call. I was still doing house calls at the time, and which I still am doing now. But you know, referrals, people that I knew that were coming in, not new foot traffic. So that kind of scared me.
Right.
is anybody going to find me over here? But thankfully, there is a Mexican restaurant across the street that's very popular. And from their storefront or from their windows, it's sort of like you can't help to see my shop. It's right in front
okay.
of it across the street. So, you know, that kind of helped generate the traffic. But, you know, most of it was I really had to work for it.
Gotcha. So, now you said you're still doing house calls. So how do you do that with you working in a shop? Do you have to shut the shop down, or you have somebody that's helping you?
Well, I do have, I had a tech that was helping me. And basically, either he would do the house calls and I would stay on site or stay in the shop, or vice versa. At the moment, it's just me. So, he ended up getting another job that paid a little bit better than I could pay him. But, you know, he still helps me out every now and then. I'm just really picky about who I get in here. You know, I pride myself on my service, and it's just I need to find that right person, that right chemistry, that I can have them in here. If it's just the two of us in here and everything can work smoothly, and I can trust them to treat my customers the way that I would treat them. I think that's kind of a blessing and a curse, because I'm so hands-on with my business. I need to learn how to just release it, you know, let right. it go to somebody else and be able to trust them. But right now I'm basically doing house calls on I try to schedule them on Wednesdays. And I let my customers know, I have a sign on the door that says, you know, on Wednesdays, I am doing house calls, and I also offer a 15% discount for the inconvenience if, you know, somebody were to come and I'm not here, I do offer a 15% discount on services for that inconvenience. That's worked out pretty well. I don't like doing it, but I don't like turning away business. If I'm sitting in the shop for 2 hours and nobody walks in and I don't have any new service or, you know, any new work, and somebody calls me and says, hey, I need you to come on site. My wireless router is acting up and all kinds of stuff. I'm going to go and, you know, make that business, you know, sure. make that money instead of, you know, sitting around the shop. So I'm working on, you know, getting somebody in here. It's just I'm not in a rush.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it is hard to find the right person to that you have a chemistry with that you can actually, you know, let them do the business and be able to take your hands off. It's a lesson that I'm having a hard time learning, but I am learning. Taking my hands off the business and going, you know what? Let somebody else do this, because as much as I still enjoy doing computer repair, I don't enjoy doing certain things in computer repair as much as I first thought I did.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
Matter of fact, I've got a machine sitting downstairs right now that's, you know, it was reloaded probably back 887 days ago, and I'm looking at it and it's just so gunked up, and I'm like, I can clean it, but it's one of these machines that they're just going to give it to their kids. And I'm like going, so I'm wrestling with, okay, yeah, I could clean it. And I've actually already started the cleanup process, update everything, do all that stuff. Or I could just go, hey, do you need anything on here? Wipe the thing out, put it back to the factory settings, you know, use WSUS updater, update everything with my external hard drive and call it a day, you know? So, it's hard, but you know, I don't want to do that type of stuff anymore. I don't want to do virus removals and all that kind of stuff. I'm good at it, but it's one of those things where it's never as easy as you think it's going to be. Some of them, man, you work on it. It's like 20 minutes hands on, you're good to go. Some of them you work on, you're like going, why do I still have this problem? Or why do I still have that problem? You're like, oh my gosh, you know? So, but, no, that's good. That's good. You need to be picky, you know, and I'm the same way. I want the right type of person with the right personality to deal with my customers. My wife tells me all the time, she goes, you know how to talk to them. I said, I don't know what I do. I just, okay, whatever. I know how to talk to them. That's good. That's good. But it's just one of those things. So anyways, back to you though. What types of things have you been working on lately, either in your shop or on site?
I've been doing a lot of virus removals, a lot of screen replacements, laptop screen replacements, and we do cell phone screen replacements. We only do iPhones though. So, iPhones, iPads, any iDevices. I feel like the Android line is, there's just so many of them and the screens are so expensive. I just can't keep up with, you know, the guys that are around here that, you know, that's what they specialize in.
Okay.
So we keep a few of those, on hand. I've been doing a lot of cabling. We also do low voltage cabling, networking and things like that. So I've been actually really busy with doing things like that. I still have a few XP upgrades trickling through the door. It's and the thing about the XP upgrades is the ones that bring them in are the ones that actually want to do it. Their machines are so outdated that I just wouldn't even recommend putting Windows Vista or Windows 7 on there. I know a lot of people don't like Vista, but I still will put Vista on a machine and, you know, just streamline it to where it you know, everything is just loading up in any of the defaults that can be on there. But I'm still getting those and I'll do them. You know, as long as they're coming in the door. For the most part, that's the majority of my work. So.
Okay. So now with, with like virus removals and stuff like that, or let's say with screen replacements, In as far as laptops, do you do any other type of work with laptops? Other than screen replacements, or you get down into, you take them apart and
Oh yeah, I take them all the way apart. You know, I have the laptop repair videos.
Okay.
Even before that, you know, and Steve did an excellent job with those, man. But even before that, I would take apart laptops, and I was just real patient. You know, if something wouldn't come loose, or, you know, the lid wouldn't, you know, or I'm sorry, the base wouldn't separate from the palm rest or anything like that, I just wouldn't force it. You know, if I double check it for any screws that were still in there, and half the time, you know, if it didn't come apart, it was because there was a screw that I missed.
Exactly.
And just keeping up with those screws and, you know, how, you know, where they go and everything. Now I'm kind of at the point where I take the screws out and I just put them in one container, because I kind of have a photographic memory of where those screws go. 99.9% of the time, I will say there's that 1% that I'll have a screw left over and I'll have to take the whole laptop apart to find where that one screw went. But you know, it's, I'll take it all the way apart, replace motherboards. I don't do anything aside from, resoldering, DC jacks to the board.
Okay.
You know, any capacitors or anything like that, I don't really mess with. So yeah, I mean, I can take them apart and put them back together.
Very cool.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, you sound just like me, because I remember when I first started taking laptops apart, I would take the screws and I would line them up, and I lined them up in the pattern from, you know, the bottom of the laptop, and then the ones from the top of the laptop, I would line those up next to it. And I had a big pool table with a tabletop tennis thing on there, ping pong. And so I had, I'd lay the laptop out, and I had all these screws, and I, you know, made sure that they would go back in the same exact spots. You know, I'm the same way nowadays. I put them all in a bowl, and everybody's like going, you know, you don't do that. And I'm like, yeah, most of them are marked anyways, 6 millimeter, 8 millimeter. It doesn't, you know. There's only a couple, 3, maybe 4 screw sizes total that you're going to find in a lot of these laptops anyways. But, you know, and I still, there are times that I get a laptop that I've never taken apart. And you're right. Most of the time when it doesn't come apart, it is a screw. And I can't believe how many times I use a flashlight. I've looked at all the screws and I go, how did I miss that one? But it happens all the time, you know?
It's right there in front
of like,
you.
Yeah. Wow. But there's still a lot of times where I'll go to take a laptop apart and there's just something that's not separating, whether the keyboard's not coming off in the right order or something. And, you know, I'll go on, YouTube or something like that and watch a little YouTube video on somebody else taking that same exact laptop apart. And I go, oh, that's what I missed. Okay.
Right.
You know, and that saves me a little bit of time, as far as I could sit there and mess with it, but I sit there and I'm prying on it and I'm like, nah, I'm doing something wrong. And, so yeah, YouTube has been a beneficial help, because there, most of the time there's somebody that's taking that laptop apart before me. So,
right.
You know, but, that's good. No, that's really good. I still like laptop repair, especially screen repairs. Those are easy.
Screen repairs are I mean, I actually love them. I mean, it only takes me about 15 minutes most of the time. You know, every now and then you get the one laptop where you pretty much have to disassemble it to get the screen out. But, yeah, for the most part, it only takes me about 15 minutes. So, you know, it's a quick turnaround for me and the client. So.
Yep. Yeah, I had an Asus laptop, one of those those, you know, they're real thin, you know, metal laptops, and in the screen, basically, you could buy the screen one of two ways. You could buy it with the hinges and everything on there and the whole frame and everything around it, or you could buy the screen. The funny thing is that screen was glued in there. And if you looked at the prices for the screen or the one with the frame around it, they were the same price. They were like $200. And so, you know, the customer had a screen was messed up, and I'm like going, yeah, we're just going to replace the whole screen and frame, because I don't feel like taking this apart and trying to re-glue it back together and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that stuff does happen. So when you're doing on-site jobs nowadays, what types of things are you dealing with in the home? Still virus removals and stuff like that, or networking problems?
There are still virus removals. I do have an on-site fee. Anything within a certain area, I do charge that fee. Anything outside of that area, it's an additional fee. Now, that does include pickup and delivery. If it's a virus removal, if it's going to take me more than an hour, I try not to stay on site.
Okay.
I'd rather bring it back to the shop and deliver it when I'm done. Not only because I just feel like I can tackle more things at once here at the shop, it's also because I don't like the customer looking over my shoulder.
Exactly.
You know, some of them aren't as bad as others, but I don't even want to, you know, I don't have a problem dealing with the customer. It's just when I'm going into their downloads to see if there's anything in there that they might have downloaded that can be causing the problem, I don't like them to be over my shoulder. Well, where are you going in that folder for? What are you doing that for? It slows me down.
Sure.
And I just feel like I can get more done if I'm not bothered.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Aside from that, yeah, virus removals and anything with like the home network. I do a lot of printer installs. Yeah, it varies, but those are the main things. I have just started a residential remote support.
Okay.
Which is really taking off. I'm right outside of a neighborhood, so when people leave out of the neighborhood, they drive by my shop, and it's an older neighborhood. I mean, I would estimate probably, you know, most of them are in their 50s.
Okay. Up.
So, you know, I have a lot of them coming by and saying, well, and it's simple stuff. Well, I just want to create an email, or I want to open this Word document, but it won't open up, you know, things like that. So I implemented a remote support package for $19.99 a month. I'll remote in, clean it up. It includes 20 minutes of phone support and free on-site. On-site pickup and delivery.
Okay.
And also includes discounts for any other services that's not in that scope of work. And it's really been taken off. You know, most of them just want to have it done. You know,
right.
they find it convenient, and you know, it's steady income. I can count on that income because it's either a 6-month contract or a 12-month contract. And you know, I build them on subscription basis, so you know, I know that income is coming in, so that's a really good addition to what I already have going on. So
very nice. Okay, good. So yeah, managed service. Yeah, that's I think that's the way a lot of techs are going nowadays. And what I'm realizing is when these computers are going out, they're starting to have problems, you know, within the first couple of months of, you know, even right. after a cleanup or a reinstall or whatever, they're still having those problems. So yeah, managed service is definitely the way to go.
Yeah. I got the idea because I do business, businesses as well. And, you know, it's one of those things where I'd like to do more business support, but you know, the residential, I don't think I would ever cut off my residential customers just because some of them, you know, every now and then you get a client where they want everything done for free, but, you know, there's still money to be made in, you know, residential. You know, I feel like I'm a good salesman as well. So, you know, I do try to upsell and, you know, if the customer needs something or if I feel like they could benefit from something, I do recommend it. I'm not pushy at all, but, right. you know, that's the difference between going on site and making $50 and going on site and making $150. And the customer is twice as happy as they would have been, you know, spending the $50. So,
right.
You know, I still like my residential. But yeah, I try to do a lot of business as well. I do have, 4 business contracts. I think the least amount of computers on site is, 8, So, you know, nice. I do theirs as well once a month on site for them. So, yeah, trying to land a few more business contracts because those are quite lucrative. But, you know, one business at a time.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think you hit it on the head because I'm feeling the same way. As I'm not ever going to let my residential customers go because there is residential people that want to be helped and they need the help and they're willing to pay for the help and that's fine. And, you know, it's just a certain type of customer that I'm looking for. One that's not trying to, you know, get the best deal out there all the time, but they're just willing to pay for a service and I'm going to give them a quality service that a lot of other technicians are not going to give them. So I feel that, you know, my service is worth the amount that I'm charging. So that's
right.
Good.
And I had to, I had to learn that as well. You know, charging what I'm worth. When I first moved into my shop here, I was charging basically what I was charging at the flea market. You know, at the flea market, you feel like you have to, you know, charge less cause you're in a flea market.
Right.
And I carried those prices over to where I'm at now. And I quickly had to learn, you know, I'm not going to make it if I'm only charging half of what, my competition is charging. You know, right. I do like to be competitive. I am, priced lower than my competition in the area, but by a few dollars.
Right. Exactly.
I find that most customers will go to a certain place to save a couple of bucks, but you know, they'll do business with you, and if you treat them right, they'll come back and be repeat customers.
Well, I figure a lot of, you know, those customers that want, you know, if a couple dollars is going to stop them and they want to go to the other, you know, the competition or whatever, that's not really the type of customer I want. And right. Matter of fact, I'll dial the phone for them. Here, let me get them for you. I'll send those customers my competition all day long because I want the customer that's, you know, there's more of a relationship where they trust me, I trust them. They're going to bring me their stuff whenever there's a problem. They're well taken care of, and I don't need, you know, thousands of customers out there. I don't really need that, you know. Like you said, you got a few businesses and stuff, and then you got your residential customers, and that's kind of the way that I see the market going, and you know the way that I want to conduct my business. So, So what are some of the maybe some of the favorite tools, software, or hardware that you use in your business?
Well, I have a few here. One of the tools that I use, especially for cell phone repair, and I find it really, really beneficial with laptop repair as well, as the iSesimo pry tool. I've heard it mentioned on here before. I can't remember who mentioned it or what episode it was, and I apologize, but it is the best pry tool. The pry tools that come with the cell phone repair, you know, if you buy a screen and those little junk. Cheap tools that they come with, I mean, I basically have a bin that I throw them in, and it's almost full at this point. But it's a slim tool that the edge of it is tapered, you know, very fine, and it gets into those creases or those seams and really does a good job of prying the screens off, whether it has adhesive or not. It can get in there, and it'll actually, if you push it in far enough, it'll actually separate the adhesive without doing damage to the screen. It's a really, I use it almost every day. I ended up buying four of them, and I always have to have one. I have one on each of my tech benches because I'm always reaching for it.
Right.
But it's probably one of the best tools as far as, you know, repair tools that I use, and I really enjoy that.
Now, where's that one come from?
It's called iSesimo.
iSesimo, okay.
There are some other ones. For example, I did buy another one off of eBay. It is an iSesimo brand, but it was rebranded to another company. I guess the company that actually uses them, and then they they resell their own, I guess. It was a little bit cheaper than the iSesimo. The original iSesimo I got on eBay for, I think, about $11. And this rebranded one was only $8, just because it has, you know, it's, I guess, the cell phone repair company that uses them, they put their own name on it and then resells it or resold it. Whose name is on it, you know, as long as it works. I use those quite a bit, but yeah, they're, you can find them on eBay. You know, they're all over eBay. I also use, of course, the Fabs Auto Backup. Now, I will say I did put off using the Fabs Auto Backup for quite a while. I did hear a lot of people, you know, talking about Fabs Auto Backup as well. And I just kind of figure, you know, I don't need to spend any extra money. I can just copy documents to a hard drive and do it the way that I've been doing it for free. Well, one day I just decided, hey, I have some extra money lying around. Let me go ahead and buy a few more tools, and Fabs Auto Backup was one of them. And I was mad at myself that I had waited that long, because it really speeds up the process. It really expedites the process of doing a reinstall. It saves the settings. I mean, it all the way down to the desktop screensaver. I mean, I had a customer just yesterday that wanted everything copied, all their documents copied to another laptop. And so I asked him, you know, well, how do you want it set up? Do you want them in the corresponding folders, or do you want the folders to be changed? No, I want it to look exactly like this laptop right here. I said, I have the perfect thing. I'll have it looking exactly like this laptop. So I ran the Fabs Auto Backup, did the restore on the new machine. And it probably only took, they only had about 20 gigs of data, and only took about probably about 30 minutes.
Okay.
And so I showed the customer, and he, oh my goodness, you know, like, it looks exactly like it. This is awesome. I know where everything is. So, you know, that it's, if you're thinking about getting it, get it. It is a great tool. That's definitely something I would recommend.
Now, were those two different types of machines, or were they the same laptop?
No, two totally different laptops. One was a Dell. I don't remember the model number for either one, but one was a Dell, one was an Acer.
Okay.
It really doesn't. I mean, I've taken copy or backups from desktops and restored them on laptops. As long as there's enough room on the computer that you're restoring to, I wouldn't see why I would have a problem doing that. So
that's a good tip.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that tool. for my remote support, I use SplashTop. I had been looking for some remote support tools. I had did the TeamViewer and the LogMeIn. LogMeIn was I love LogMeIn, and then they turned on us. So I had to find another tool. Even TeamViewer, they made some changes to where I should have bought the copy of it, but you know how that stuff works out. I did want to license a remote support software, and TeamViewer was just a little bit too pricey for me. I don't do remote support that often, so I didn't feel it justified the price. I did come across SplashTop, which is $60 for the year, and it does everything that I needed to do aside from booting into safe mode. If I do need to boot into safe mode, I do need to go to, the select startup menu and, you know, tell it to boot into safe mode. But aside from that, I enjoy it. It has a very good connection, very fluid. And like I said, it's $60 a year. Now, one other thing I want to point out about Splashtop is it's not something that it is something that you have to log in on the client side. So it is something that I do prefer to go on site and install myself as opposed to sending them a installation package, which is convenient. I can send it to them and say, okay, run this and everything will, be working pretty much. With this one, I have to log in with my credentials on the client side as well. So, I don't like to give out that login information. So
gotcha.
I have to go on site to do it. If I want to if they needed to uninstall it, you can uninstall it without the credentials, but you know, I think that's one of the other drawbacks. But like I said, I don't do remote support enough to, justify more than $60 right. for the year to do it. I kind of do it as it's needed for my remote support clients. Another big tool that I have which is not really a tool. It's more of the fact that I don't throw anything away. any laptop that I get my hands on, I keep. I don't throw any parts away. I don't, even if it's, a hard drive caddy, screws. I have a big tub of laptop screws, all different sizes. More, you couldn't even imagine. it's thousands. Wow. I would even say hundreds of thousands of screws. I don't know, but it's a lot of screws. I keep every part that I have, and probably, a few times a month, I'll have somebody come in and say, this is going out, or I need to replace this laptop fan, or, screen needs to be replaced. And I have those parts on hand. Most of my clients, they don't mind a used part as long as it works. I do give a 90-day warranty on all the used parts that I sell. So, I tell them, hey, you can buy this new one for this much, or I have a used part that, I can sell you for a little cheaper and it'll work just as well. And most of the time they opt for that. So it's something, most of the time I don't buy laptops. I don't buy parts that I need for customers, but I have a stack of laptops in my laptop room and they're 4 feet high. Divided by make and model and sure. things like that. So I can go and, part through them and, it's like a laptop junkyard,
Right.
I can just go and pick and pull what I need. And, I would recommend, if you have parts, don't throw them away because you never know who's going to need them. You might have a cousin, especially if you have a storefront, you have people coming in all the time. Chances are that laptop can help you fix another machine. So I try not to throw anything away. So
the power supplies that I have that only have 20-pin connectors for desktops, I probably shouldn't throw those away then, huh?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't. I would keep them too. I do have 20-pin connector. And you always get that one person. They're nostalgic and they love right. their old machine. And they don't care that it has Windows XP on it. I've had customers say, well, I don't hook it up to the internet anyway. I just use it for word processing. It's never given me a problem, and I want to just get it fixed.
Yep.
There's been. There have been times I still have DDR RAM lying around and, things like, older parts for those people who want their older machines. So, they do come in. So
I'm with you because I actually, I was kind of joking with you a little bit, but I still got, I still got PC-100 RAM sitting in it. I got old AMD processors, 1200s, 1100s, 2100s. Yeah. So I don't know what it is, man. I can't throw that stuff away for some reason. I'm like going, dude, I'm never going to use this. I'm like,
yeah, but you can't put it in the trash.
I know. It's just, I can't, you know, it's like, I keep saying I'm going to call somebody to come and pick all this stuff up and recycle it, but I haven't done that yet. So yeah, I've got a stack of, it's probably about that big of, you know, PC-100 RAM, maybe about, you know, 4 inches tall, and just a lot of old machines that I had that I parted out, and I just have.
Well, I think I'm a little bit of a klepto, because even the hard drives that I pull out that are, you know, they test bad or anything like that, I keep those as well. I have a bin full of damaged hard drives, and I don't want to throw them away. I'm going to find a use for them eventually, but you know, I can't bring myself to throw them away. You know, they're just, I just feel like I'll find a use for them eventually. And then as soon as I throw them away, you know, something will happen. Oh, that's what I could have used it for. So
you'll need that part or whatever. Yeah. I actually have, it's funny because I have a stack of bad hard drives too. And I look at them and I go, yeah, maybe I'll get SpinRite and, you know, put that on another computer and just have it run on it and see if it'll, see what it'll do to that drive, you know? And I haven't. The only thing I do is for customers is I'll take them and, you know, I'll tell them, you know, I'll use, you know, Derek's Boot and Nuke and, you know, wipe them out, make sure I completely wipe them out or whatever. Or I think Acronis has got a tool that I use too that does the same type of thing. So, oh, that's okay. Good. Yeah. Keep your old stuff. You never know.
So I have probably 4 more tools here.
Okay.
We have time for them?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Another tool that I use is the 3DP chip. You know, I've heard that one thrown around a lot as well. The 3DP chip is basically a small, you know, utility that will find the network driver for pretty much. I've only run into a couple of machines that it doesn't quite install correctly, and I'll actually have to go to the manufacturer's website to get the driver. But it's a quick tool to get the internet driver installed to do, you know, your updates and, you know, in program installs and things like that.
Right.
There is another one called 3DP. I'm sorry. It's 3DP Net. That's the one for the internet driver. 3DP chip has the other drivers, video drivers and all of that. I don't utilize the 3DP chip as much as the 3DP net. I prefer to get the drivers for the sound card and you know, all the other hardware from the manufacturer's website. I've used you know, programs that automatically install drivers before, but the couple of times that I did use them, I ended up getting a blue screen for some reason right after using them. I don't know if it's because of the program that I used or what, but it's kind of put me off to the all-in-one driver installs. I kind of prefer to go to the website and just download them. I mean, it takes a little bit longer, but I know that the drivers are updated and I can install them myself. But you know, that's a good tool.
Yeah, that's definitely the way to go. I was gonna say, yeah, I've ran into the same thing where I've ran an all-in-one driver, you know, replacement or whatever, and it does, it messes something up, or and a lot of times what I think happens is 9 times out of 10 I think it's a bad video driver. Mm-hmm. And because that's what I've had problems with in the past the most is video drivers. If you do not have the right one, especially when you're working with laptops and stuff, or even if you've changed operating systems on that laptop and you're trying to use another you know, video driver, it'll screw the system up. And so a lot of times I use for the driver stuff, I do the same thing. I only try to get the network driver so I can get it online and, you know, get it updated and go from there. So that's a good, good tip.
Okay. I have 3 more for the tools. I'll try to blaze through them real quick. One of them is AskView. It's from nearsoft.net, NIRSOFT.net.
Okay.
And it basically is a, you know, password viewer for any passwords saved by your web browsers, whether it be Chrome, Internet Explorer, or Firefox. I think there's support for a few other browsers. But I've used this more than I thought I would. It's a free tool that that you can download. I just kind of had it just for the sake of having it. But it's very useful for people who, you know, they can't remember their logins for, Gmail or their Facebook logins. Like I said, I have a lot of older clients that I do support for, and they'll make their email and then they won't use it for a couple of weeks, and then they'll try to log in and can't. So, it's a good good tool to get that password. Right. Very quickly, and it saves a lot of time instead of having to reset passwords and things like that.
And I'll tell everybody too, if you do download this tool, Passview, it will show up in most of your antivirus as a malware or virus, which it is not. It's a tool that we use because it's going to break in and basically get the passwords for you. That's why it's looked at as a hacking type tool, which it is.
Right. Right. Yeah. I can verify that every time I install this. I gotta make an exception for it.
Right.
I also use I got two more here. Sandboxy. I use that for certain clients. Most of the time, clients that keep coming back because they reinfect their systems and blame it on me. He went to some sites that are known for downloading, all kinds of stuff, and he basically wanted a reinstall. I gave him, did a reinstall, updated everything. It was ready to go. Is it running? I mean, it was blazing fast when I gave it back to him. He came back 2 days later and said, "Hey, man, you didn't do a good job. I still have stuff popping up and I'm looking at him like, I know, I did a reinstall. There's no way that you can see something on there. You must have downloaded something else." So this guy, I didn't want to, he was kind of yelling at me. I didn't want, anything to, I didn't feel like arguing. So I did another reinstall for him. I still had his backups and everything, so I just did the reinstall. No questions asked. Okay, I'll do it. So he comes in about 3 days later and says, "Hey, man, there's still stuff on here." And I say, you must be downloading something. You must be the sites that you're going to. So, and this is how I found out, he was going to these sites, because he was like, "Well, I go to these sites and I'd like to, watch these movies and all of this." I said, "Well, that's where you're getting them from. You can't, these links that you're clicking on are they're bad links. You can't just run around these sites and just click on everything." So I did the Sandboxy install, which I did charge him for the labor to install it. And then the license for the Sandboxy. Now the Sandboxy, for anybody that doesn't know, is, a sandboxed environment. Anything downloaded in the browser, or any changes made in the browser, stays in the browser. Once the browser closes, all of that data is deleted. So nothing actually touches your hard drive. And as long as it's used correctly, I mean, it keeps the system, very clean, as far as I can tell. I'm sure that there are some holes, penetrated as far as security is involved. But for the most part, it's a good tool to use for those, stubborn clients that that you don't want coming back.
Exactly. No, that's a great tip. Yeah, that's something. Yeah, definitely something to use if you have a problem client. Definitely put that on there. I've never used it myself, but I think I've. Dor used to talk about that back in the day when he was doing computer repair, and I think it was either Sandboxy or something similar to that. But basically, that's what he was doing.
Yeah, there's some other ones that do the same thing. Okay. But yeah, that's the brand that I use.
Okay.
So, okay, so just I get one more One more is the PC check. I actually bought this back when I was still in the flea market. It's a Eurosoft PC check, PC checker. And if I knew what I knew now, I probably wouldn't have just, you know, shelled out the money to get it. But now that I have it, I use it all the time. And I mean, it's a pretty good hardware diagnostic tool. It does a real good job at detecting faulty hard drives, bad RAM, motherboards. I mean, you can pretty much test out every piece of hardware on your machine. It is a little pricey. I actually found out about it because I had a client that had their machine looked at by Best Buy. And then she brought it to me, and Best Buy had left one of their discs in her machine. And me being nosy, I figured, you know, I'd go on there and see what's on there, because it, you know, it does have, you know, return to Best Buy if found. But, you know, I wanted to see what was on there.
Sure.
And it had this tool. So I did. I returned the disc, just in case a Best Buy associate is listening. I returned the disc, but you know, I did go to check out the PC check, and I did buy it. But yeah, I mean, I use it anytime there. I think that there's a bad hard drive or you know, bad RAM or anything like that.
Right.
You know, after the fact, I learned about MemTest 86 and all of that. But you know, at the time, I was just looking for tools. I was just looking for the best tools,
sure,
that I could use. But it is a very comprehensive tool, and I mean, you can make reports, and it's have used. I'll say that much. It has a slew of features that I just haven't used, but
okay,
you know, for my use, it's a very good tool. So.
No, very cool. Yeah, you know, sometimes tools are definitely worth the money that you pay for them. I know a lot of times on the laptops, well, actually pretty much any manufacturer, laptops or desktop, Dells, HPs, a lot of them have the tools on the newer computers that, you know, you can check on boot. And
right,
when you're booting in, you can go ahead and go into diagnostics and check a lot of that stuff. But it is nice to have a checking tool that you can check all that stuff before you get started into a hard drive. Or virus removal, tune up, and stuff like that. You want to make sure that your equipment's working right, because I don't know how many times I've had this happen to me. I get a whole computer cleaned up, and there's a hardware problem.
Right.
And I go, wow, I just wasted all my time. You know.
Yeah. So, any computer that I get, I do a quick scan on it with the PC check. Yeah, just to check the hardware, because yeah, that's happened
good,
to
yeah.
me too. Wasted time.
All right,
but.
Was that the last tool that you had?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, very good. No, very comprehensive. And I'll try to get the if you have some links or whatever, if you want to send them over this way, that'd be great. If not, I will look this stuff up when the show posts. So, what are some of the business tips that have worked for you in your business? I think we talked about how you got started in what you've done, but what types of things would you say are important to you, or a tip that might help somebody out there?
One of the main ones, is, I guess it'll be the first one that I'll say here is, make sure you have, the proper paperwork. You know, clients signing off on the work that you're doing, on drop off and pickup. I did have a client that came in, she was off in February, and did not come to pick it up until September. Yeah. And so I have a clause in my check-in receipt that if the computer is left for more than 90 days, that it becomes property of Neeltech Solutions, that it's considered abandoned. And I do that because I don't like to store computers, because they take up room on my,
right,
on my benches. I called her multiple times. The number that I called, it basically went straight to voicemail. I left her multiple voicemails. So anyway, she comes back in September and, you know, says, "Hey, I'm here to pick up my computer. My name is such and such. Here's my check-in receipt." Well, you know, I had to tell her, "Ma'am, your computer, I believe we had reinstalled it to be resold. And I think we had sold it to recoup the work that we did on it. So the computer had already been sold. So she lost her mind.
Right.
She was very upset, and I understand, you know, it, but you know, I made every attempt to contact her, you know, and so for me as the business owner, it looks like, hey, I don't care about this computer. Been there for 7 months, you know, just, you know, either forgot about it or, you know, do whatever you want with it. So she, long story short, she ended up calling the cops. The cops come over to my shop and say, hey, do you have this lady's computer? You know, if so, you need to, you know, why do you have it, or basically, or why won't you return it? And so I basically showed them the paperwork that she had signed stating that it, you know, if left over 90 days, it's our property. I showed them the date, and they basically told her, ma'am, you know, there's nothing that you can do about this. And you signed off on it, and, you know, that it's out of our hands. I don't like the way that it ended up. I did really think that she had just forgotten about her computer. I would have, you know, and I have had clients that they go over their 90 days, but as long as they're in contact with me, I'll hold the computer. A happy client is more than, you know, a few bucks trying to part or sell their computer. It's not worth it.
Right.
But if, you know, with no contact or anything like that, you know, I had to do something. And of course, the paperwork, the signatures and everything were imperative in, you know, keeping me legally safe in doing that. So having the proper paperwork, whether you have a shop or not, whether you're just a on-site tech doing it part-time or what have you, you need to have the client sign something. I even have my, you know, if my family member wants to have work done, I have them sign a paper. Everybody signs their check-in receipt. Everybody signs their paper. So, you know, that's something that I almost had to learn the hard way, but thankfully, and actually one of the tools that helped me to do that was the TechNibble toolkit, which I'll say, but you know, that was a good, you know, toolkit to get started and, you know, have that kind of you know, paperwork already ready to go. Another business tip, I do a lot of Yelp, or I have a lot of reviews on Yelp, or I do have a 5-star review on Yelp that I'm very proud of. Now, I mean, by a lot, you know, I probably have maybe 8 reviews, but they're all 5-star reviews, which I'm very proud of. A lot of my clientele, a lot of my walk-in clientele come from Yelp, which I did some advertising with YP, which was the worst decision of my life. I probably only got like 1 or 2 confirmed, you know, people from YP. Yelp, I don't even have the paid version of Yelp. It's the free version of Yelp. And that's probably, I want to say, 30% of my walk-ins.
Wow.
I mean, it's almost every day I get somebody from Yelp coming in saying, hey, I found you on Yelp. Living Social is a good tool. I also heard about that here on Living Social. Getting on Living Social, doing the daily deals and all of that. I did hesitate to do it because they take so much of your profits. They take 50%. And I was hesitant to do so. But the long-term results from Living Social are better than the payout. I've gotten so many return customers from Living Social that it's worth it and then some. You do get, you know, like I say, you do get 50% of the payout, but it's already discounted more than 50% of what you would charge. So I had a Living Social running for $29.99 for your first hour of diagnostic and repair. I only got about $15 of that. So it's, you know, for me to sit there and know that I'm working on a computer for $15 for that first hour, it was, I mean, you can't focus on that. Where I made my money back was upselling, right. You know, things like, you know, either remote support or upgrades and things like that. I did charge a little extra for things like, you know, virus removals and reinstalls because they do take longer than an hour. But I set those prices at a I didn't charge by the hour. I kind of prorated and charged a flat rate, which made a lot of them happy. And that's another thing I do. I don't charge by the hour. Every one of my services is flat rate. It just, if you know how long it's going to take, you know, just charge, you know, what it's going to take. You know, you don't, customers, they don't like, you know, paying by the hour from what I can gather from it. You know, if they think that you're wasting time.
Right.
Kind of like, well, did it really take 4 hours to do that? You know, you're charging by the hour. It's flat rate. They know how much they're going to pay. You know how long you can take on it before you start losing money. So, you know, it works out for, you know, good for both parties. But yeah, I kind of got off the Living Social with that, but yeah, they're a good, company to advertise with.
Well, and to get your name out there and stuff too. So that's Living Social. I think I looked into a while back. It's similar to a Groupon or something like that.
Yeah. And actually when I did advertise with Living Social, they actually put me on Groupon as well. So I was on multiple websites, you know, Living Social, Groupon. I think there was another one that I had people coming in from, but you know, it's more for just getting your name out there. You're not really going to make any money on it, so just a good marketing tool to do that.
Good publicity. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other business tips that you can think of?
Not at the moment. I mean, okay. It's if you're looking at, I guess my biggest thing is, you know, being in a storefront. If you're looking at going into a storefront, anybody looking at going into a storefront, it's always going to be, difficult to make that leap. But you know, I had to believe in myself to do it, you know, and you know, it's kind of one of those things. If I hadn't done it, I would be kicking myself right now. You know, some people don't want a storefront. Some people just, you know, like doing it on their own, you know, out of their house. But I kind of knew that this is what I wanted. You know, I kind of knew I wanted to be able to say to somebody, hey, I have a store here. This is where you can go to get service. You know, I kind of knew that I wanted that for myself, but, you know, it just make the jump. You know, if you fail, it's a learning experience, come back stronger next time. But you know, if you try hard enough and you really have a good, you know, plan going into it, you know, there's no reason. I mean, computers are here to stay. There's always going to be work out there.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know,
keep up with the times, really. Keep up with the latest technology.
Okay, very cool. Well, Talaferro, that's enjoyed having you on the show. And if people wanted to get in contact with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Neiltechsolutions.com is my website. I do have contact forms on there. You could also email me, neiltechsa@gmail.com. That's NEALTECHSA as in San Antonio @gmail.com. That's my personal email. I really like to conversate with people who love computers and like to talk about the latest, you know, stuff. It's hard to talk to people here in my city because they always think that I'm trying to learn their secrets, you know, that my, you know, they're my competition. You know, sure. I've gone into a couple of shops before and said, hey, you know, my name is TJ. I go by TJ. My name is TJ. I have a shop here on Riddiman. And as soon as I say I have a shop, they kind of like just lock up and they don't even want to say anything. But, you know, I can understand it. You know, they want to protect their business and everything, their secrets. But, you know, I do like discussing the business aspect. I do like discussing all of that. And it's hard to find people, you know, that you can talk to without them thinking that you're trying to take their clientele, you know, so.
I have this philosophy that says that basically it doesn't matter how many computer repair techs you have in your own personal business, or if you're a one-man shop or whatever, there's only so many computers you're going to be able to fix on a daily, right, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And there's enough computers out there for there to be a lot more techs than there are out there right now. And right, you know what? The way I look at it is, treat your customers right. And if you do, those customers are going to come back. If not, I always tell people, if you're not happy with me, go somewhere else. Because, and it's no skin off my back. It's fine. I'm not hurt by it. I just want to, I want you to have the best experience with me that you possibly can. And if you can't do that, then take it someplace else. And, I think people like that honesty. But that's what it's about. It's about personal relationships, in a business. It's not just about business.
Right, so, right.
But no, I appreciate, again, Telfero, appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us. Man, you had a ton of information that I've got a whole list here. I'm just like, wow, this has been great. And you're more than welcome anytime you want. Come back on the show. Yeah, you got something new going on, or you got some new tips and tricks and different things that you're doing, more than welcome to come back on and let us know what you're doing. That'd be awesome.
Definitely. I will definitely. That offer. I enjoyed it, and I appreciate you for having me on, and this is it's been an experience.
Very cool. And would you say to the people out there, was it an easy experience as a tech to sit here and talk with me?
Oh yeah. It's, like I said, I love discussing things like the business and tech in general. And to be able to talk to somebody and not have their eyes glaze over as I talk, it's it's nice to be able to do that. So
that's the way I paint this show. I paint it as a, guess what? Your wife and family really could care less about what you do. And if you want to come on and talk about the things that you do because you find them interesting, this is the place to definitely do it. So,
right.
If you guys want to find me, you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on a show like Telfero was, just email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And we'll get you signed up and we'll book a time and you can come share what you're doing in your shop and come help some other people out. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to bring you these awesome shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. Each show will give you some good apps to try on your phone or tablet. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in learning how to do remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. You want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech? Listen to the Geeksters. You want to learn about Linux so that even you can understand? Then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server related, at work or for fun, check out the Server Show. In the market for a new phone? Check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information about your mobile technology. Take your health to the next level and check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.